Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
It's Wednesday, February 26. Good morning. 5:10. Here we go. How many times did we talk about the Pedway last week? We had that big interview with somebody from the Architecture Foundation, gave us all the secrets of the Pedway, how to get in, how to get out. So after the show yesterday, I went downstairs and I got lost in the Pedway. I was trying to get from our building here at 303 East Wacker up to Michigan Avenue. I just wanted to get to the corner of, like, Michigan and Wacker.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally made it up there, but I walked around about a mile in circles. I think I took a wrong turn somewhere.
Okay, how can you make a wrong turn? It's pretty much a straight line.
Well, at one point I realized I was seeing the same things for the second time. So, I mean, there's a lot of signage down there, but they always point you in one direction if you're looking for Michigan Avenue. If you're trying to get sort of underground through the Pedway from east of Michigan Avenue, you're trying to get... I don't know what happened to me. I followed the signs, and so after about two orbits of the same Pedway area, I decided to try some other routes, and I finally made it outside. It took me about, look, had I walked outside yesterday and done it, it's like a 5-minute walk. It was about 20 minutes, I think, before I made it out.
Well, I'm glad you didn't get lost once you got outside.
Mary, where were you with a Pedway traffic report?
I don't know.
No, once I got lost outside, I was fine.
I get lost down there, too. They need, like, an information booth down there.
And you know what?
Where you can stop and ask questions.
Guides. You know, I used to be an NBC page when I was a kid. I'd be happy after 9 o'clock to take on a second job and do that, direct people.
I don't think you'd be very good at that because you already got lost.
I mean, I hadn't been down there in a while. There's a lot of stuff down there.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of retail, and there's a health club. And
which you can't use,
what
by
do you
the
mean?
Way. Because it's only for people who work in that building.
Where the pool is, you mean? There's a swimming pool.
Talking about a different place. You must have found another one.
One of the times I was going around in circles, I noticed a pool, and there's a lot. I was thinking, wow, this is really cool because they have a lot of signs, and it's very helpful. And I kept following the signs to Michigan Avenue, but something was amiss.
Did you see the Amazon Go store?
No, I didn't. I didn't see that.
I thought that's what you were going to see.
No, I was just trying to get to Michigan Avenue.
Well, yesterday you wanted to see the Amazon Go.
I heard about it yesterday. We were talking about it in the morning, how they're opening these big Amazon Go grocery stores around the country. And apparently the one here, Dave, that you told me about yesterday, is sort of a mini version of that. Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a smaller one. Yeah. It almost is like a convenience store.
Yeah, they opened a big one, I guess, in Seattle yesterday or something.
Right.
Yeah.
But that one's like the Architecture Center. So it's, you just do what you did yesterday, Bob. Just go through the Pedway, make a right, and you'll find it.
I should have stopped in and just asked for directions. It's 5:14. We'll get to the first caller of the day. That person wins a prize always at 312-981-7200. Let's check in with Nancy Liu, see what she's covering for WGN-TV. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, Bob. I am keeping tabs on the markets. As you know, they took a dive all week due to coronavirus fears and all of the market shutdowns, basically, in China. I mean, a lot of manufacturing shut down, and that ripple effect is really being felt in the U.S. economy. But the Dow, of course, taking a big dive Monday. Tuesday, yesterday, we lost around 900 points, over 1,000 points on Monday. So a lot of anxiety and anticipation about today to see what happens on our markets today.
Let's see, Dow futures so far zigzagging between losses of 50 points to 200 points early
right.
this morning. Europe and Asia stocks in the red, so it might be another tough day.
Yeah, and, you know, but on the flip side, you know, there are economists saying that, you know, hey, it's a great buying opportunity. Whenever the market's down, it's time to get in. So it's definitely wait and see. And, you know, the CDC announcement yesterday about that coronavirus will be impacting the U.S. eventually, it caused even more fear. And so it's definitely wait and see. Now, reportedly, the Washington Post is reporting that President Trump is furious about all of this, that the CDC sounded this warning, causing, you know, more fear and instability in the markets. And so he is supposedly meeting with his advisors today, hoping to, you know, stave off any more market just unstableness. It's definitely a trying time.
Everyone should remember what my freshman year Roosevelt High School economics teacher said in class. He said, buy low, sell high.
Exactly.
You want to use that? You want to use that on the WGN TV morning news? Feel free.
Yeah, of course. And gosh, he may be the only person ever saying that.
Yeah. All right, Nancy Liu, thanks for the report. Have a great day.
You're so welcome. Have a great day. Good luck.
And it's first caller prize time. 312-981-7200. Get in before anybody else and you win something. Mary, you're the expert on this. What do you do? It's Lent. Can you eat an Impossible Burger? There's a big story on this in the Tribune today. Have you thought about this?
No. You're supposed to be fasting, more or less. So you can eat one, I believe it's like one major meal. You know, but you're supposed to be fasting most of the day with little bits of you know, sustenance just to keep you going. Mm. But no, I don't think that's a good idea.
It says here in the report in the Trib, faux meat products from the likes of Impossible Foods made with soy and Beyond Meat, whose ingredients include pea, rice, and mung bean protein, do not run afoul of Lent's meat abstinence laws, which bar Catholics aged 14 and older from eating animal flesh on Ash Wednesday or any Friday during Lent, save for the aquatic kind, and Lent running Ash Wednesday through Easter Sunday, April 12. So it sounds like, according to some expert, you can. It's okay.
Well, it's meatless, so I suppose you can, but it just seems like an Impossible Burger is something that's supposed to be really fun and good to eat, and the word fun is not really in Ash Wednesday, so that's why I would say no, I would not eat it. I'm going to stick with some fish or, you know, cheese pizza, grilled cheese.
And and what I said yesterday about giving up exercise for Lent, that probably is not something you can do either, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't fit what the requirements.
You know, I choose to exercise more for Lent. That would probably be a good thing, because you're supposed to better yourself. You know, so I think I'm going to shoot for the bettering myself than, you know.
That's always a good idea.
I can't give up the chocolate. I've tried. I've tried.
I'm addicted to. Yeah. You're not alone there.
I'm a bad Catholic person, I guess.
Yeah. Almost 5:24 now. Here's Mike calling from the O'Hare area. You're the first caller. That means you win. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Not as awake as you are. What are you doing out there near O'Hare?
I am plowing up on the sixth floor of the garage in front of the Hilton.
Oh, so you're working.
Oh, I'm working. I'm busier than
Don't say it. Yeah. So you clear the parking area there?
Yeah. We got a contract with the city doing the parking lot and sidewalks on this side of the fence.
And who do you work for, Mike?
Builders Landscaping.
Hey, that's a nice deal to have, O'Hare, right?
Oh yeah, nice. You know, it's quiet up here, but the only thing is windy up here. It's cold up here.
Is it colder there? Why would it be colder there?
Because I'm up on the sixth level. It's so windy.
You're up top there.
Yeah, I'm up top here.
So let me ask you a question, Mike. If you've got somebody coming in from out of town, do you pick them up there with the snowplow? Do you just park the snowplow over there on the baggage level and wait for them?
No, I can see them from up here, though. I got a nice bird-eye view up here of everything.
All right, I'm going to let you get back to work. How about a $50 gift certificate from Builder's Supply Outlet?
Sounds good.
Builder Supply, so much more than kitchen cabinets. Check out The Edge, their state-of-the-art kitchen and bath showroom in Broadview. We'll get that out to you, Mike. Appreciate you calling and listening. Have a good day. Happy plowing.
Yes, I'll be listening to you all morning, so be on your toes.
Well, now that I know you're listening, I'll do an extra good job.
Hey, can I ask you a personal question?
This is going to be a mistake. Yes, go ahead, Mike.
No. How old are you?
You know what? I hit the big 7-0. I did.
No! Yeah. You're not no 70.
It's depressing.
No way!
Yeah.
No way!
No. That's it.
Oh, wow.
That's the reality.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, I know.
I'm 61, and you look younger than I do.
Well, fortunately, I have my dad's chromosomes, and he looked young his entire life. But I think, though, there could be a mistake that my mom messed up the birth certificate, and I believe she was 10 years off. So it's possible I'm 60. I'm researching this.
I couldn't guess that in a million years, 70. I couldn't believe it.
I'll get back to you when I finish my research project. I have to go down to the Cook County Bureau of Records to figure out what my mom actually wrote. But
yeah, I know. It's rough getting old, though. My insurance company sent me a half a calendar.
Note to self, when caller says, can I ask you a personal question, just say no and move on. Hold on, Mike. Our people will get your information so we can get that prize out to you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you, Mike.
That was a pretty good line.
Pardon me?
My insurance guy sent me half a calendar.
That was pretty good, yeah.
Going to use that.
I was already thinking, why did I let Mike go on? So I didn't really pay attention to that line. It's 5:27. I'm watching the Hawks last night, Dave, and it seems like, okay, they're back. Hey, maybe it'll be a winning streak. And then what happened?
Well, kind of similar to what happened last time they were in St. Louis, where they had a lead in the third period and couldn't hold it. And they did have an opportunity late on the power play. I think St. Louis took a penalty with about 17 minutes into the third period. And the Hawks actually did click on the power play a couple of times in the game last night. Three times, but they could not get that last one, and they end up losing to the Blues for the third time this year. And it was kind of, look, that's a really good team. That's the top team of the Western Conference right now, but they had a chance to beat them and couldn't get it done. And you know, if you were watching the game at the beginning, the Blackhawks took a penalty 11 seconds into the game, and St. Louis scored a power play goal a half minute in. So they were kind of climbing uphill all night. They did take a 3-1 lead, but Blues came back.
Well, what was the final, 6-5?
6-5.
Yeah, I think it was Jeremy Colliton I heard talking about the game. I was falling asleep at that point. He sounded disgusted.
Yeah, I don't think he was very pleased with. I mean, those are games, and it's kind of the season in a nutshell to a certain extent for the Blackhawks, where they've had the opportunity to win games and haven't been able to finish, to close it out. And the Bulls kind of went through a similar deal last night, where they came from behind, had the lead, and then couldn't hang on against Oklahoma City, and the Thunder took the lead in the last couple of minutes and wiped out a couple of great individual efforts by the Bulls. You know, one of those
very
nights.
Very disappointing.
One of those nights.
And what did we learn yesterday when the Bears' front office met the press? Did we learn anything about what's going to happen?
I know this is going to shock you, but Mitch Trubisky is going to be the starting quarterback next season.
But they may bring in other people, right?
They may, and they're going to look at free agency and see what their options are. But at least for now, they're standing firmly behind Trubisky going into the 2020 season.
Well, he has to say that now,
but,
doesn't
well,
he?
Well, yeah, but what they're not saying is what happens with his fifth-year option, because they do have a deadline to they have until May to decide that, and so we'll see what they decide to do with that. And you know, so they do have some decisions to make going forward at the quarterback position.
We got football news, we have hockey, we have baseball, we have basketball, and then we have other things happening in the world. Mr. Grzanich has that. I was flipping back and forth last night between the debate from Charleston, South Carolina on CBS and the Blackhawks game, and maybe it was because I was half asleep. I couldn't tell the difference between the hockey game and the debate. It was a little feisty last night, another contentious debate. Again, Bloomberg taking most of the bashing. We're going to check in with Jim Ryan from ABC News, reporting from Charleston, South Carolina, on the aftermath of that debate. And we'll keep you posted with a few extra conversations this morning with WGN meteorologist Mike Jensen. So we'll let you know what's going on with the snow. And a little later this morning, after 7 o'clock, Dr. Eileen Marty, who actually advises the government on disease and matters like the coronavirus, she'll be talking with us about what exactly is happening, what she thinks is going to happen, and how we can protect ourselves. That'll be coming up at around 7:40 this morning. And it's 5:40 right now, and in just a second here, we'll check in with Jim in Charleston, South Carolina. By the way, if you want to get in touch with us ever, here's the email, bobshow@wgnradio.com, bobshow@wgnradio.com. Phone number and the text number is the same here, 312-981-7200. Jim Ryan covered the debate for ABC, and it was another big fight with everybody pounding on the front runner. Right, Jim?
Right. Pounding on Bernie Sanders. He came off Nevada with the caucus win out there, Bob, but pounding on each other as well. It was hard to hear exactly what they were talking about at many points because they were talking over each other. It was just chaos at points. I think the moderators at some points during this debate simply lost control. It set a time limit of a minute 15 for each of the answers, but very often these candidates were going on for 2 or 3 minutes and holding up their hands and trying to get into the next question. So, yeah, it was a little chaotic, but I think Bernie Sanders got the showing that he was hoping for. He defended his position on previous votes that he's had in the Senate. Then he also deflected some of the other criticism that came from the six others there on the stage, Bob.
It seemed to me that someone advised Joe Biden to crank it up a little bit. He came out of the gate angry, it seemed to me.
Yeah, he needs to show that energy. That's exactly what I think he was trying to do, was to go for something that made him seem younger. You know, Buttigieg has been talking about this. Pete Buttigieg, the ex-mayor of South Bend, has been discussing this and saying that he's kind of the new generation of candidate, casting himself against the older ones like Joe Biden, like Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren. So Biden, I think you're right. His advisor said, look, you need to step it up just a bit. More energy, maybe even a little more anger. And that's what we got last night, Bob.
I'm looking at a report from Bloomberg News. The headline is Bloomberg's second debate, steadier but still bumpy. And it's interesting that this comes from the company that he owns, but apparently they can write whatever they want. Is that what you've heard?
Sure, yeah. I mean, they're trying to maintain that autonomy, and I think that it's pretty obvious that they expect the kind of criticism that would say, how can you criticize your boss? He's the one writing the checks to pay your salaries. But I think Bloomberg himself has said that his publishing branch is autonomous from his political campaign. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that they would write something slightly critical of Michael Bloomberg.
So how has the spin been after the the debate, what happened, and where do we go from here? We wait for the polling on this and how the debate went down. Is that what's next?
Yeah. Right, yeah, I think, you know, very soon after it was over last night, even before it was over, the pundits were talking about it and offering up their own opinions. The real opinions will come on Saturday when South Carolinians go to the polls in their primary. Of course, a week from yesterday, Bob, is when we have Super Tuesday, and 14 states will send their voters to the polls to decide among these Democrats, and we'll get to about half of the delegates awarded in that voting. So, right, the polls will come out today. People will express their opinions on how last night's debate went. Then comes the actual voting on Saturday, and then Super Tuesday next week.
It made me nervous last night. At one point, it seemed like everybody had their hand raised because they wanted to talk, and Pete Buttigieg just kept talking. He didn't stop. It was, you're right. I mean, the moderators really couldn't control it, could they?
Yeah, and you're right. And Buttigieg seemed to have a different tone as well. Whereas before, he wasn't, I wouldn't say mild-mannered, but he was polite at least. But I think last night, his gloves came off, and he was really going after these others. And I think his advisors told him to do that. I think that there was maybe more anger last night, Bob, among the candidates. And I suspect that is coming from their advisors, their campaign staff, saying, this is time's running out. You better get in there. You know, take out the knives and let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, they're looking into the primaries are coming up. We're coming to the height of the season, and then finally the general election in November.
Yeah, I don't know whether we learn anything important about how they stand on different policies, but it makes for more entertaining debates. Jim Ryan from ABC News, Charleston, South Carolina. Thanks for checking in with us, Jim.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
And let's say good morning to Orion Samuelson. How you doing, Orion?
Well, I'm doing fine. Hope you are, too. We've got about an inch of snow on the ground in Huntley, Illinois, 25 degrees at the moment, and winter hasn't said goodbye yet. So,
yes, and the Dow Jones futures, looking at that, might be another rough day. You have any predictions?
No predictions on the market. I stopped doing that a long time ago, but the one thing that I keep saying is be careful about selling in a down market like now, because pretty soon stock prices will reach a level that will attract the bargain buyers and they'll come in and turn it around, but may not be today yet, because I'm looking at my Reuters, and particularly in the Middle East, we're looking at coronavirus spreading, and Kuwait says 25 cases now from 18, and the Brazilian government is confirming its first case of new coronavirus, so it hasn't gone away yet, and until it does, we are going to have the ups and downs of the marketplace.
Yeah, the latest report here, Dow Jones futures slashed strong overnight gains early Wednesday, along with S&P 500 futures and NASDAQ futures amid the coronavirus stock market sell-off. Also wanted to mention a story that's in the Sun-Times in that food section today, in the taste section. We talked a little bit about this last week. I don't know if you had a chance to see this yet, Orion, but it's an article headlined, Americans Souring on Milk, Famous Dairy Brands Products Could Disappear. Tough time for the dairy farmer and a tough time for the companies that make milk products, isn't it?
It really is, and the problem is we have stopped drinking milk as much as we once did. We're not doing that. Thank heaven for the pizza industry, because that has probably saved the dairy industry because of its consumption of cheese in the pizza market, but the fluid milk market, yeah, not very good at the moment, and I don't know how they're going to turn it around. They're working on it, obviously, in Wisconsin and other dairy states, California and Pennsylvania and New York, but that's a tough situation. I drink my glass of milk every night before I go to bed, so I'm not at fault. But
good boy.
You betcha.
The Agriculture's National Agriculture Statistics Service reports consumption of dairy milk fell about 41% from 1975 to 2018, dropping from 247 pounds per person annually to 146 pounds, or about 17 gallons. Consumers increasingly turning to milk alternatives, thousands of dairy farms collapsing, milk producers are now faltering. thousands of jobs at risk, threatening their brands. We've talked about Dean Foods, Borden, and they're all waging a big campaign now. They want to ban alternative drink makers from using the term milk to describe their beverages. So if they have their way, almond milk will not have the word milk on the label, right?
And I'm totally in favor of that, because if it doesn't contain a dairy product, you ought not call it milk. But I understand why the companies that are selling the alternative brand use the word milk, because milk traditionally has been a term of quality for consumers, and so they don't want the plant-based milk people to use the word milk. And there is a rule, but the FDA is not enforcing it, because about a year ago the rule was made with the FDA that if it doesn't contain a dairy product, you have to call it a beverage. You can't call it milk.
Yeah, in this article that's in the Sun Times today, they talk about the FDA and how these companies want the Federal Food and Drug Administration to enforce what's called standards of identity, which would reserve dairy terminology for traditional dairy products. The FDA is weighing a potential update to that based on modern marketing trends. They didn't comment on this story, but it seems like that should happen, because that's more accurate labeling, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we need that in the food industry. That's why the FDA was put in charge, to make sure that if it's a meat product, you don't call it something else. If it's not a meat product, you don't call it meat. And so, but they've known this for a year, that these rules have been in place, and they haven't enforced them. And the dairy organizations that I've been talking to are continually saying, come on, enforce the rules, and we'll stop complaining. One other story that I wanted to share with you, because I'm a fan of Western movies, always have been, and the big story in Western movies was cattle rustling. It hasn't gone away. 262 cattle in Texas were rustled from a ranch, and they're offering an $11,000 reward to get those animals back. February 18th, farmer Joe Adcock reported the steers and heifers missing from his ranch located in Perryton, Texas, and he said he needs them back, because that's a lot of money when they come and take 262 cattle in the dark of the night, of course. I did it.
Yeah. Yeah, nice to hear that's still going on.
Yeah, not for the rancher, not for the farmer, but yeah, it still says the magic in the
cowboy is alive
and
the well.
Cowboys.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, Orion, have that glass of milk and two more today, please.
I will do just that. You do the same.
Have a good day.
Okay.
It is 5:56. Let's get more on what to expect in the markets today from Steve Grzanich now.
The Outlook, sponsored by Associated Bank. New home sales for January are due this morning. Housing industry analysts expect to see sales bounce back from December's decline. The experts are forecasting a 1.9% gain to an annual rate of 707,000 homes. Those numbers coming at about 9 a.m. Chicago time today. The Mortgage Bankers Association has a weekly look at mortgage applications. We'll see how the refinance and home loan markets are doing. EIA crude oil and heating supply reports are out, and a couple of Fed speakers out speaking, Kaplan and Kashkari, on monetary policy and the economy. On the earnings calendar, J.M. Smucker, Lowe's, Papa John's, SeaWorld Entertainment, Weibo, Wendy's, Hostess Brands, L Brands, Marriott, and Square, all reporting quarterly earnings today. Just a few things that could move the markets on Wednesday, February the 26th.
Thank you, Steve. We'll get to the news momentarily from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. I'm guessing that this is Mary's favorite story of the day, a new boutique heading to Chicago's Magnificent Mile later this year will sell the same high-end brands shoppers can find at nearby stores on the city's luxury retail streets. The Real Real will open a 12,000-square-foot store, its first Midwest location. Even I know about this store from my wife. And apparently, you can get some good bargains. Do you shop there? Do you know what this is all about, Mary?
No, I don't.
You don't?
Is it a knockoff brands?
Let's see. Buying secondhand has been losing its stigma among consumers.
Really?
Looking for better value. Yes, unique merchandise or a more sustainable way to shop. But The RealReal, which announced plans for the Chicago store while reporting their earnings for the year, is not the typical neighborhood resale shop. And its opening on North Michigan Avenue is just the latest evidence of how much the retail marketplace has changed. They sell, well, they don't call it used, gently pre-owned merchandise. And according to Mrs. Surratt, they have some good stuff in there.
I love the gently used stuff. I mean, I go to Goodwill a lot, you know, and just pick up furniture, cool furniture, repaint it. It's so much fun.
RealReal, you're going to have fun there. They deal in authenticated luxury goods from Prada, Cartier, Rolex, and other labels, and they're going to have a 12,000 square foot store in the 900 block of North Michigan Avenue.
When are they opening?
They are going to open this spring.
Okay, I'll be there with Marianne.
Yeah, and a lot of other people, I think. Let's see what else it says here about this. The location is meant to be convenient for local shoppers and consigners in the Gold Coast or on the North Shore, as well as tourists. Oh, yeah, you can get things to them, and they will sell them for you, too. They do that.
Consignment, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The first floor will have secondhand women's and men's apparel, handbags, shoes, and accessories, jewelry, watches, and art. An upper level will have an office where people can consign goods, and there will be a cafe in there. So there you go. There's your newest addition to Michigan Avenue. Coming soon, The RealReal opening its first Midwest location. Something to look forward to for Mary and others. We have the top six at six to look forward to here. We'll let you hear one of the feistier exchanges from last night's Democratic debate when we go over the six stories people are chatting about today. It's 10 after 6. I'm sure you've been hearing about the boom in vinyl record sales. And it's not the old fogies buying those vinyl albums either. The young kids are into it because they've discovered the great sound quality of vinyl. But there may be problems ahead. Apparently, the factory that was making 75% of the key component used to make discs around the world burned down out in Los Angeles, a place called Apollo Masters. They had a bad fire there, and they're closed. They make blank lacquers, the shiny circular plates that are essential for the production of vinyl records, and nobody seems to know what's going to happen now. The only other lacquer maker in the world is in Japan. It's operating at peak production. They're not taking on new clients. It's interesting that in 2019, vinyl sales in the U.S. grew by almost 15%. That number's been going up for about a decade. Total 18.8 million records. Vinyl is still a relatively tiny piece of the market, only 4% of all U.S. music sales. Compare that with 82% for streaming and the remaining 14% for digital downloads and CD purchases. I know my kids discovered vinyl, and they love it. And they also love, and this is what we loved about it, the tactile feel. The album cover, you hold it in your hand, you smell the disc, the artwork, right? I mean, and now all the major artists are coming out with their albums on vinyl.
Yeah, my son just got a record player for Christmas.
You know what? That's big too. With again, a relatively small percentage of the market, but it gives me great hope for the future to see our young people appreciate the music on vinyl and how it sounds.
Especially when he had to ask me how to lift the needle. with the sidebar. I'm like, really? This is not exactly technologically advanced.
They're learning.
It was pretty funny.
Do you still have your vinyl collection?
I do.
I do.
I knew you did.
Yeah, I do. You know what? And I, you know, I admit that I haven't touched it. I mean, my kids have touched it, but I haven't in a long time because, you know, like everybody else, I went to CDs and now streaming. But I've complained about this for a long time. I never liked the compressed sound that was on a CD. And this is what the audiophiles and the youngsters are discovering, the warm sound, that analog sound that you get in vinyl. It's actually, and the people who know a lot more about this than me explain that it is a truer sound that you get. So hopefully they'll figure out a way to keep producing vinyl, even though this factory out in Los Angeles burned down. And let's see, they quote one audio engineer. He says, "This is not something that's going to be easily handled emotionally, financially, aesthetically, or artistically." So you're going to be hearing more about that, I think, in the future. Yeah, you know, my wife keeps saying, "Aren't you going to get rid of those old albums?" But, you know, I can't. I just can't part with them. They're attached to so many memories. I mean, that's the thing with these albums. You remember where you were when you bought it, and you remember looking at the cover while you played it for the first time, and, you know.
Taking the cellophane off the album cover, right?
I love looking at the prices. Some of mine still have prices in the corner.
$398, yeah. $498 for stereo.
I still have a ton of mine. Lost some in a flood in my basement, but, yeah, I still got quite a few.
I also had 45s, and so I got a jukebox and put the 45s in the jukebox. And
that's fun.
Yeah, my kids discovered that too, and they love it. They play it more than I do. So the younger generation may be okay after all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Now the top six at six with Bob Surratt on WGN Radio.
VJ Records, you talk about vinyl. I mean, they were right here in Chicago, and actually, and I'm sure they'll get into it on Channel 9, they ended up with the Beatles before anybody else. It's a pretty cool story about old Record Row here in Chicago. Okay, 619, let's get to the six stories people are talking about this morning. First up is the weather, and let's get the latest update from WGN meteorologist Mike Jansen. How does the rest of this morning's rush hour look, and what about the evening rush, Mike?
The morning rush is going to be snow-packed. Unfortunately for us, you'll have to deal with the light snowfall out there. So far, it appears that your main arteries, they have not become snow covered, just wet, but those side streets, they have become slushy. But there's the potential, especially in northwest Indiana, where snow could fall a little bit heavier, for some of those main roads to become a little slushy. The snow will start to taper as we get into the afternoon, so watch the snow move from west to east. Still lingering a bit in northwest Indiana. There they have a winter weather advisory. It's going to go until 6 o'clock this evening, so they could actually, across the Borman, other areas like that, may have to deal with some snow during that evening commute. But on the Illinois side, it looks like it's just a morning commute getting into the afternoon. Just some spotty snow showers out there. Things looking better. But it's going to be a very windy day with winds out of the north gusting 35 to 40 as temperatures hover in the lower 30s.
I heard you talk about meteorological spring. What exactly is that, and when is that? What does that mean?
Meteorological spring. We like to take 3 months, which basically have similar conditions. So starting March 1st all the way through the end of May, that's meteorological spring. And then you think June through August is meteorological summer, and so on and so forth. So meteorological winter started December 1st, is going to run until the 29th of February this year. And then we get to meteorological spring on Sunday. Doesn't mean that all of a sudden we'll get rid of this nasty snowy weather, but that's when it starts. So a little bit different than what you would consider to be, you know, actual spring, which doesn't, this year will come actually late on the 19th of March, but meteorological spring starts on Sunday.
In other words, if you're making outdoor plans in Chicago, still best to wait till after Memorial Day.
And then it's iffy through parts of June as well.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Let's move on to the next page.
Now, page two.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Federal health officials are saying that the outbreak of the coronavirus in the U.S., a question of when, not if, and they're urging hospitals, businesses, and schools to prepare. There are currently at least 57 people with the virus in the U.S., all of whom have either recently traveled to Asia or are closely connected to others who have infectious disease. Who have. Infectious disease experts are stressing that people should not panic. The expert will join us to talk about this after the 7:30 news this morning. We'll check in with Dr. Aileen Marty, who advises the government. So it'll be interesting to hear from her later today.
Page three.
The candidates faced the last Democratic debate last night before the South Carolina primary. That is coming up Saturday. Of course, Super Tuesday contest next week. And it was a super intense exchange early in the debate last night between Mike Bloomberg and Elizabeth Warren. Listen to this.
You know, this is personal for me. When I was 21 years old, I got my first job as a special education teacher. I loved that job. And by the end of the first year, I was visibly pregnant. The principal wished me luck and gave my job to someone else. Pregnancy discrimination, you bet. But I was 21 years old. I didn't have a union to protect me, and I didn't have any federal law on my side. So I packed up my stuff and I went home. At least I didn't have a boss who said to me, kill it. The way that Mayor Bloomberg
never said that.
Have said to one of his pregnant employees. People want a chance to hear. People want a chance to hear from the women who
I never said that.
And
for the record, if she was a teacher in New York City, she would never have had that problem. We treated our teachers the right way, and the unions will tell you exactly that.
Well, Mayor Bloomberg, Senator Warren has raised...
Let us have the women have an opportunity to speak. The Bloomberg corporations and Mayor Bloomberg himself have been accused of discrimination. They are bound by non-disclosures so that they cannot speak. If he says there is nothing to hide here, then sign a blanket release and let those women speak out so that they can tell their stories the way I can tell my story without having...
Thank you. I am Nora.
They're going to be sued by a billionaire.
Nora O'Donnell trying to restore order to the wrestling match last night in Charleston. They all came out fiery, and especially Joe Biden. It seemed like his advisors said, "Joe, don't take it anymore." And he seemed very disturbed that he was getting cut off and not called on when he wanted to speak. And then. Mike Bloomberg, somebody gave, I'm sure one of his advisors gave Mike Bloomberg a comedy line. And I think he should fire his comedy writers because it didn't work. At one point, he had the floor and he said something like, I am surprised my fellow, he called them contestants, showed up tonight after I beat them so badly in the last debate. And you know, and there was complete silence when he gave that line. So note to Mike Bloomberg, you may want to hire a new comedy writer.
Page four.
The Chicago Firefighters Union Local 2 is making a renewed push to increase retirement benefits for 2,200 of its members at a heavy cost to taxpayers. $18 million the first year, $30 million every year after that. The bill was introduced by State Representative Robert Martwick before he was appointed to the Illinois Senate to fill the vacancy created by the retirement of State Senator John Mulroe. It would remove the birth date restriction that has prohibited roughly 2,200 active and retired firefighters born after January 1st, 1966, from getting a simple 3% annual cost of living increase. Instead, they get half that amount, an annual increase of 1.5% that is not compounded.
To whom it may concern.
Bob Iger has stepped down as CEO of the Walt Disney Company. He may be the second most important person in Disney history behind Walt himself. Building the company into the giant it is today, he oversaw the acquisition of Pixar, Marvel Studios, and Lucasfilm, all producing films that shattered box office records across the globe. The timing of Iger's announcement came as a shock to both Disney employees and the media world. And the question now is whether he can be replaced. He hands the reins for now to Bob Chapek, the head of Disney Parks, Experiences, and Products. Iger will remain with Disney to direct the company's creative endeavors through the end of 2021.
Stand by for news.
And finally, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has issued a warning letter to the Jimmy John's sandwich chain, saying certain vegetables it served were implicated in 5 outbreaks of E. coli or salmonella in the past 7 years. The letter accuses Jimmy John's of engaging in a pattern of receiving and selling, quote, adulterated fresh produce, specifically clover sprouts and cucumbers, end quote. The restaurant chain has removed sprouts from all its locations until further notice. Now, I've said this before, I'll say it again. You hear about these outbreaks of disease in various greens, lettuce, broccoli, sprouts in this case. Have you ever heard of this with pizza, hot dogs, Italian beef, ribs? Never. Never. I rest my case. By the way, did you know that Jimmy John's is owned by the same company that owns Arby's, Buffalo Wild Wings, Sonic, and Rusty Taco, a company based in Atlanta called Inspire Brands? And they acquired Jimmy John's. So they own quite a few of these fast food places, all of Steve Grzanich's favorite restaurants. They own them. It's just one company.
Did you say Rusty Taco?
You know, Rusty Taco.
Yeah, where's
Taco.
That?
What is that?
They're not in the Chicago area.
I would never eat there.
I hope it's Rusty's Tacos.
Yeah, that's a bad name, isn't it? Yeah. Somebody contact the Inspire Brands corporate headquarters and tell them they may want to change that name, Rusty Taco.
Yeah.
Oh, that was my radio name when I worked in Mexico.
Hi, would you like some oil with your taco?
There's a guy named Rusty. After a day of fishing, had an authentic street-style fish taco in Mexico, and he was hooked.
In this story, it does not say Rusty's. That would be better.
Is it
Rusty's?
Yeah. It is not Rusty's. It is
actually Rusty Taco?
Yes.
No, that's a mistake.
Apparently are not any locations in the area.
Jimmy John's removed all their sprouts on Monday. And apparently they've had this problem in at least 17 states. So, you know, again, I say stick to your foods in the Chicago food pyramid. Hot dogs, Italian beef, deep dish pizza.
And that's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Saras on WGN Radio.
Good day.
Coming attractions, we do have something from the Bob Surratt record collection coming up this morning. And we'll talk to attorney Karen Conti before 7 o'clock this morning about what's happening with Harvey Weinstein. And also that lawsuit filed by the widow of Kobe Bryant yesterday against the helicopter company. That'll be coming up also before 7 o'clock this morning. Good to have you with us today on WGN. And, of course, we'll keep you posted on what's happening weather-wise and traffic-wise. Looking out the window here, we do have some snow downtown. And we're going to have some through the morning rush hour. Coming up, we'll get you the forecast for the evening rush hour as well. And for that matter, everything that's going on around your block and around the world. Here we go. I wanted to touch a spring yesterday, so I'm flipping around looking for a spring training baseball game. I got very excited for a minute because I saw on my guide on MLB Cubs in Colorado, but I guess it was blacked out here or something because they weren't showing the game. And then I see where our friend Paul Sullivan, writing in the Tribune Sports section yesterday, talked about how a lot of Sox fans are upset there aren't more games on television. Sullivan writing, neither of the Sox split squad games on Tuesday against the Giants and Indians will be televised by NBC Sports Chicago, which instead carry a sports betting show and a NASCAR show during that time. The next televised Sox game isn't until March 13th against the Cubs. Paul writes, I don't know why a network partially owned by the Sox doesn't carry more spring training games, especially if it's a choice between the Sox and NASCAR. If there was any spring, they should want to show off the product before the season begins, this would be the one. The Sox spent the winter making move after move to improve the team, and it would be nice to give fans an opportunity to see what they can do, not to mention hear Jason Benetti and Steve Stone perfect their vaudeville act. I agree. I mean, yeah. Well, I don't know why they can't do that.
Did the game the other day, and I think... And by the way, WGN Radio will bring you the White Sox Friday.
That's right. You get
It was supposed to be last Saturday, but that game got rained out. But so that makes our first broadcast Friday's game of the Cleveland at Camelback Ranch, 2 o'clock.
And March 26th is the Sox opener against
the
Royals.
Can you believe it? I mean, it's coming up so quickly. It's snowing this morning, but March 26th will be at Guaranteed Rate Field for the Sox and Royals.
I can remember many, many opening days where I was at the ballpark and it was snowing.
Oh,
it's
sure.
It's not unusual.
Oh, not at all. Sox got rained out, got snowed out on opening day. I think 2 years ago, two or 3 years ago, and of course, I think the Cubs had a game snowed out in the middle of April last year.
I remember going to a Cubs opener. This was back in the 90s because Marianne and I were doing Fox Thing in the Morning, and we had a new executive producer, this guy named Art, and I said, "Hey, Art, you want to go to the game today? I got some tickets." So he says, "Yeah." And so, you know, we go to the game, and it's not snowing, but it's cold. And so we're sitting there, and we had some pretty good seats. It was fun. You know, we were dressed accordingly. At least I think we were. And all of a sudden, the third inning, Art gets up and says, "Well, I got to go. It's pretty cold out here. I'll see you. I'll see you at work tomorrow." And I'm thinking, what? And this guy's going to be trouble as an executive producer. It's funny because I have drilled into my daughter's head the idea that you don't leave games early. Don't be like the L.A. fans. Beat the traffic and, you know, leave in the second inning. And so it was funny because she was at the Bulls game on, I think it was Saturday night, and I don't remember what happened. They lost to the Suns, I think, Saturday
yes.
night. And so she calls me like about halfway through the game. She was with a friend of hers who I guess wanted to leave early. And so she called me and said, "Dad, is it okay if I leave early?" And so I said, well, you know, she was there for some sort of seminar earlier at the United Center that the University of Illinois had arranged. So I said, well, you know, you weren't there specifically for the game. You went for this event and then stayed for the game. So, yeah, it's okay. You can go.
Okay, so you were kind of providing her with the alibi.
Well, in that case, I really was proud of her that she thought to call me and check and make sure I wouldn't hold it against her if she left a sporting event early.
That's fair.
That's what you have to teach your kids.
What's the coldest opening day you remember?
Well, there have been so many that you dress like it's a Bears game. Yeah. I don't remember one specifically. I just remember games that were called because of snow and cold. But I remember sitting out there in 40-degree weather when they were playing. How about you?
Well, we used to do our big pregame show across the street in the McDonald's parking lot. We had the big trailer back in those days.
When the station had the Cubs. Yeah,
yeah. We'd mm-hmm. be out on the stage starting at like 9 o'clock in the morning. It was a 1:20 game.
Yeah.
And every few minutes, you'd have to go in to warm up.
Yeah. I made a few guest appearances there over the years. I remember that. That was a nice setup.
Oh, it was a great setup. Yeah, except it was cold.
Yeah, if you were outside on that stage. Yeah, no, it's... I mean, I was kidding WGN meteorologist Mike Jensen a few minutes ago about making outdoor plans in Chicago. You have to wait till after Memorial Day. But really, I mean, to be safe, you kind of have to do that pretty much. I mean, it's not unusual for the temperature to be. And, you know, you get into April and it's warm one day and freezing the next day. You know, that's how life
is. I tell you, Memorial Day weekend. About 4 or 5 years ago, it was cold rain mixing with a little bit of snow.
Yeah.
Memorial Day.
Yeah. Well, I've said it before. I'll say it again. Thank goodness the weather's like that around here, or else too many people would want to live here because it's the greatest place in the world. Let's talk legal matters here and check in with Karen Conte, attorney at Conte Law. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning, Bob.
Well, let's talk first about Harvey Weinstein and what happens next. And I'm not sure if he's still hospitalized, but what do you think that was all about? Do we believe the chest pains?
Well, you know, this kind of thing is obviously very stressful to people. You can imagine, you know. So, again, is he making it up? Does he want to go to a cushy place? Does he not want to go to Rikers Island? My guess would be he doesn't want to go there because that is probably where he's going to be, at least for a while. And it's a very, very dangerous place. It's one of the top 10, or I guess the bottom 10 worst prisons in the country. And he's not going to fare well there. You know, he's an older guy. He's used to a cushy life, and that place is very dangerous. So, you know, is that real? I'm not sure. But the sentencing is going to happen right away. I mean, March 11th is right around the corner. And, you know, that should be an interesting process. You know, probably the prosecutor is going to bring out other women who have been assaulted by him in order to get that sentence up as high as they can.
Now, we heard about Rod Blagojevich and his time in prison where he was out and about pretty much. He wasn't really in a cell that much. For Harvey Weinstein, because he's a sex offender, how does that make it different as far as how they incarcerate you?
Well, you know, this is a violent crime. This is not a cushy crime. This is not a paper crime. You know, people like Blagojevich go to places where there are people with, you know, crimes that were committed on paper and those types of things. Although I think Blagojevich was held initially at a place with some bad people, and then he ended up in a better place. But Harvey Weinstein is convicted of rape. And that's a violent crime. So he's going to be with the violent criminals. There's no special rich people's place to put rapists. So he's going to be treated like everyone else, although I imagine they're going to be very careful to make sure that what happens to him is not what happened to Jeffrey Epstein, because he's going to be a target there, definitely be a target.
His attorneys say they will appeal. What do you think the chances are for a successful appeal?
Jury verdicts rarely get overturned unless the judge did something wrong. There are two issues that I can see. One is, I don't know if you remember this, when they were selecting a jury, there was a woman who was writing a book about predatory older men. And they left her on the jury, and they made a big stink about that, saying that this woman had already basically written a book on people like Harvey Weinstein and was not going to be impartial. That's probably a good appeal, but it may or may not win. And then the jury instructions. I actually have a friend who is one of the lawyers for Harvey, and he sent me the jury instructions, and they're impossible to read. I'm a lawyer for 34 years, and I couldn't make heads or tails of how you were to follow them. So that will be another source of an appeal.
And then now what happens in Los Angeles? Because he is facing more charges.
Well, my guess is that he's going to be sentenced in New York, and then the Los Angeles case is going to proceed. I'm not sure what their time deadline is, but they have already announced that they're not going to they're going to continue to prosecute him. He can do 28 years with those crimes there. I would imagine that it's going to be an easier case against him because now he's a convicted felon, and he's already been convicted of these crimes, so that could probably be used in the case in Los Angeles. He's looking at spending the rest of his life in jail. There's no question about that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Vanessa Bryant lawsuit that we heard about yesterday against the helicopter company, a wrongful death lawsuit. Are these normally very hard to win, Karen?
No, they're easy to win because when people go up in a helicopter, they don't expect to crash. And someone did something wrong, whether it was the air traffic controllers, the manufacturer of the helicopter, or pilot error, someone is going to pay. And this lawsuit is basically pointing fingers at the pilot, saying he never should have gone up in this weather. He shouldn't have he failed to monitor and assess what was going on. He should have aborted the flight when the weather got even worse. And it will be successful. The question is going to be, is there enough insurance coverage for all seven of these victims?
And because it's Kobe Bryant, I haven't seen a dollar amount here, but I would imagine it would be enormous, wouldn't it?
It would be, and there are reports that there's $50 million of insurance, and that's hardly enough for seven people. If you talk about what their life expectancy would have been, what would they have earned, and that's how you really assess the damages here. What would Kobe Bryant have earned every year? What is the loss to the family? I mean, that's $50 million there without blinking an eye. So not all of these people are going to probably get pennies on the dollar when it comes to their lawsuits.
And are we looking at years before this would be settled?
Well, not necessarily. I think the first thing is the NTSB has to issue their final report. They issued a preliminary report, and probably in a few months we'll get that. And then the insurance lawyers will go in there and probably do their own investigation and then assess what part of damages are attributable to all of the wrongdoers who might be named as defendants. And then they sort it out amongst all of the seven families. Now, you know, that could be mediated. It could be a judge could decide that. But I would say that maybe within a year or a year and a half, this should be sorted out.
Karen Cotty, always good to catch up with you, Karen. Thanks for the info. Appreciate it.
Have a good one, Bob.
You too. It's 5 minutes before 7 o'clock. We'll get to the news shortly from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And then in our 7 o'clock hour, we are going to talk about the coronavirus to the woman who advises the government. If I read all of her credentials, we'd have no time to talk to her. She's the expert's expert, Dr. Eileen Marty. She'll be talking to us at about 7:40 this morning. Get your immune system revved up, and a good way to do that is with vitamin C. And I saw a story today about seven foods with more vitamin C than an orange. So you may want to include this in your diet, especially now during the flu season and with everybody freaked out about the coronavirus. Number one, bell peppers. They say bell peppers are the greatest vegetable source of vitamin C. Also on the list of seven, guava. There are several tropical fruits on this list of foods with more vitamin C than an orange, but guava earns the top spot. Number three, chili peppers. They make a huge impact on your vitamin C intake. Just one green chili pepper contains 109 milligrams of vitamin C. How about some strawberries? That's number four. One cup of strawberries gives you more than enough vitamin C for the entire day. Do you like kiwi? Kiwi provides 80 milligrams of vitamin C. That nearly meets the daily requirement. Besides being an excellent immunity booster, they say kiwi is great for your eye health. Its nutrients help prevent cataracts and macular degeneration. Number six, kale. One cup of raw kale provides 80 milligrams of vitamin C and also packs hefty doses of vitamin A, B, and also calcium.
Been saying it. I've been the lone voice in the wilderness here.
Lone voice? Kale? Everybody talks
no,
about...
No, on this station. No. On this show.
Oh, I see. You're talking about the crew here.
Dave, yes. I have an announcement to make, by the way. Uh-huh. I recently made a recipe with kale. And it was delicious.
What? Really? Deep dish pizza with kale? What was it, Steve?
No, I made a pasta dish that I wanted to substitute something besides meat in it. And so I used kale and some other things and some carrots and some other things. Yeah. And it was absolutely
delicious. Well, that covered up the taste. Yeah.
Mary made me a kale birthday cake a couple of years ago. It was delicious.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, it was me and Dave and one other person tasted it.
It was awful. It was just.
It was not.
No, it was horrible.
Wasn't.
You know what, Steve? My wife would not approve of your kale dish because she'd say, okay, but don't eat the pasta now because all that pasta is just sugar.
Well,
too many carbs.
Baby steps, Bob.
Yeah,
baby steps.
Well, hey, it's not me. I'm telling you what she would do. She puts kale in that green shake she makes for me. Kale, spinach, and other different powders and potions and pills. I don't know what she's got in there, but if I call in dead one day, take the ingredients of that green shake down to the crime lab. It tastes like the lawn, but yeah, it's healthy. It is. All right, number seven on the list of seven foods with more vitamin C than an orange, papaya. Famous in skincare for its anti-aging properties, it also boasts anti-cancer and anti-inflammatory abilities. So there's your list. Bell peppers, guava, chili peppers, strawberries, kiwi, kale, and papaya. Dave, do you buy the kale that's in the plastic box or the loose kale?
There's
different kinds of kale,
yes,
you know.
In the bag or the box.
Yeah. Yeah. I go for the darkest green color because I think that's supposed to be the best.
That
for
is.
You.
Yeah. That is.
But kale, buy stock in any company that has kale or cauliflower as a product. That's my money tip for you today. And we will again check in with Dr. Marty and find out about the coronavirus at about 7:40 this morning. I have a number of questions to ask her. And number one is, what's the brand of hand sanitizer she uses? Because the last time we talked to her, I asked her if she used Purell, and she said, I use a hand sanitizer, but not that brand. And I didn't ask her which brand. Today I'm going to nail her on that, though. It's 10 after 7. I brought something in from the record collection today. On this day, February 26, back in 1966, this song became number one. Lee Hazelwood wrote it about a disgruntled guy ready to walk out on a relationship. Nancy Sinatra wanted to record it, but Hazelwood said to her, "You can't. It's for a boy." Nancy disagreed. She said, "I think it's for a girl. If a guy sings the line, 'These boots are going to walk all over you,' it sounds awful. But if a girl does it, it can be a joke." And that's the way it turned out. Here's a little bit of it from my record collection. Nancy, backed by the famous L.A. studio musicians called The Wrecking Crew, released February 22nd. And just 4 days later, number one on February 26th of 66, "These boots are made for walking."
You keep saying you got something for me, something you call love, but confess, you've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin', and now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
A little bit of Nancy Sinatra from the record collection this morning at 7:12 right now. If you were around overnight, you probably heard the traffic reporters talk about wells closed from Lake to Madison between 1 and 4 this morning, also on Lake near Washtenaw, because they were filming a movie. There's a couple of projects filming this week. Chicago Fire is out and about, and Batwoman was working this morning. They were filming. We have some filming going on in our studio today. We have a crew here. You guys are doing a TV commercial, right, that eventually I think is going to be on Channel 9. Is that it? And so we're trying to look good today and speak at the same time. It's not easy.
TV stuff is tough.
You guys aren't going to get all the beautiful buildings behind us today because of all the low clouds and fog. We're at 303 East Wacker. It's snowing. But how are we looking? Are we looking good?
Nice suit.
Yeah, you look great.
Yeah, some of us got the memo to wear a sport coat today, and some of us were told, no, just wear what you normally wear.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. Yes. I was not going to wear a sport coat. And then Marianne said to me, "No, you should wear one because you're supposed to be authoritative." So I'm wearing one.
Yeah. I wasn't going to wear a sports coat, but I brought one, and then when I saw Bob wearing one, then I put one on.
And Super Joe's wearing one.
That's frightening. When the producers start dressing up, it's scary. I can take this off and just work in, like I normally do, in a shirt with rolled-up sleeves, but I tried to clean up a little bit, you know, because you're going to have to look at this Lord knows how many times on TV. Cameron's got the camera there. Can't you shoot from the other side? That's my bad side. If you shoot from the right, it's a little better. Try to do that if you can.
I asked them if they could make us look a little less sleepy this morning.
No, that's impossible.
Trick photography,
maybe.
I could
have given you guys some concealer. Did you need some makeup?
Well, it's a little late now, Mary. Well, thanks.
Mary, those of us who have done television over the years pack concealer.
Yeah, Dave Annett has his own makeup.
Oh, yeah,
drawer.
Dave. Yeah, you're
yeah,
on.
Yeah, but I didn't put any on
all the time
for this. I want to look authentic. Bob wants to look authoritative. I want to look authentic.
Better to be fake and authoritative looking.
I just don't want to look old.
Well, that's why I'm wondering whether my glasses should be on or off. Usually I have these glasses on, and I'm thinking, should they? But if I sometimes have them on and sometimes have them off, that's going to wreck your continuity, right? Is that right? Okay.
It's confusing me.
You have to see.
Well, anyway, so it's not too bad anymore because they don't need all the lights they used to need in TV. So it's they're not as obtrusive as they would have had to have been years ago. But the crew is here with us this morning.
This studio is equipped with TV lights because
the regular lights are.
Right.
Yeah, so. And they're not hot anymore.
No.
In the old days,
they
were hot. And then they want me to say a few lines, you know, some fake lines that I'm not really doing on the show. And so they were asking me, well, when is your break so you can do that? But I'll just do it on the radio here right now. So just tell me what you need, and I'll be happy to do that for you. You don't have to wait for, like, Steve's weather forecast to have me do that.
As long as we don't have to beep it out.
Let's get some extremely local news, courtesy Block Club Chicago. And say good morning to Seamus Toomey. Seamus, I saw this report on, I think it was Channel 5, Rob Stafford did it, and it's about these postal service problems, and some folks are having their mail packages stolen, is it? What's going on here?
That's just the beginning of the issues, Bob. Good morning. Happy Sport Coat Wednesday, it sounds
like.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's Rogers Park, Edgewater, West Ridge. They're not alone in the city, but they particularly have been sort of plagued with mail carrier delays, lost packages, the mail showing up at 10, 11 o'clock at night, and also just going weeks and weeks without getting any mail at all. So the residents have been just hounding the alderman's office. The congresswoman Jan Schakowsky's said she gets calls all the time. So they finally dragged in the postmaster, the heads of the local post offices up there for a big sort of complaint session Monday night, and they really let the residents kind of like tee off a little bit on the post office and let them know how they're feeling about getting no mail for weeks.
And is there one problem or many?
Well, you know, it's a problem that the post office faces in a lot of places. They're understaffed up there, for one, both postal carriers as well as clerks in the two post offices. Both of them are on Devon. One of them is west of Ridge. One of them's east of Ridge. Just not enough people working there is what the post office says. And that's what they really pledged to. They said, we're not going to fix this tonight, obviously, but they pledged to hire more carriers, to hire more clerks in the stations, and to try to get some consistency with the routes that these carriers walk, because that's what the residents were also saying was a big problem, is we've got a different carrier every day. They don't know the routine. You know, they don't know where to put the packages. One person said, listen, my mom's a senior citizen, and you know, she hears someone going through the mailbox at 10 o'clock at night, she freaks out, then figures out, oh, it's just the mail finally arriving. You know, they're ready to call the police at that point. So lots going on, and they're going to have to hire a lot of people to try to solve it, but it's been going on for a long time. We've been covering these complaint sessions with the postmaster quite often at Block Club.
Yeah, you know, sounds like it's a problem that's not going to go away anytime soon. Let's talk about this refuge for Lyft drivers near Goose Island. As I understand it, they have about six of these in the country, and yesterday they opened one in Chicago.
Yeah, this caught our attention. This is the very first one. It just opened on Monday. They started publicizing it on Monday. It's been open for a couple days, and they're letting Lyft drivers test it out. But the idea is, you know, you've got thousands of Lyft drivers all over the city. They're united with very little other than their app. So they're trying to build sort of a headquarters for them to come in. They could get discounted oil changes, discount brake jobs, engine work. Just trying to give them a little bit of a perk, a place to meet up, free coffee, and also work helping with their phones and their apps for folks that may be struggling a little bit with it. So it's right near Goose Island. It's along Elston, between the Chicago River and the Kennedy Expressway at 1020 North Elston. It's open to any Lyft driver they want. There's a big parking lot. The drivers were raving about that, which was, I found the funniest thing of all these amenities that the drivers appreciated. It was the ability to actually park somewhere in the city was the big one.
Yeah, that's a good perk. And now to Ravenswood and something that's, is it open already, this distillery?
You know, Koval Distillery is open, but what they're doing now is they're building a huge new production plant / tasting room / store, tours. They're moving about 9 blocks north from where the current tasting room is. And this is all along Ravenswood Avenue, just east of the Metro tracks. In the Ravenswood neighborhood, Koval has been—they've really been on the cutting edge of craft spirits in Chicago. They were kind of the first ones out of the gate in the last 10 years. Start brewing their own whiskey and gin in Chicago. So they've expanded just so much. The sales are just going so well that they bought in an entire building along Ravenswood and have been working on it for a couple years. They say they're putting the finishing touches on it now. They need a city permit still for their outdoor patio. Judging by what's going on outside right now, I don't think they need that outdoor patio for a little bit. So they'll probably be okay waiting. But they're looking at April where they're going to finally be able to, cut the ribbon on it and invite the public in.
And finally, we talked about this the other day. The CTA is testing out boarding buses at the back door to speed things along. Do you think this is going to end up in a citywide change for the CTA buses?
I expect it will. It's one of those things when you hear about it, you think, oh my gosh, why weren't we doing this 20 years ago? San Francisco's already been doing it on every bus in the city. Once you get the technology back there by the bus's back door, and it's pretty simple technology nowadays, it just makes a lot of sense. Why have everyone queuing up to go? I mean, other than I like to say hi to the bus driver when I come on, but if I could get on the back faster, I would be happy to tap my venture card back by the back door. So, yeah, I think it's going to be. I think we'll see it. This is a 6-month pilot project for two routes that begin on the south side and end up downtown. So we'll just have to ask those folks who are getting on in South Shore on the Jeffrey Jump bus, they call it, and see how they like it. But I would expect the faster is better for everyone involved.
Yeah, they're going to do it on the 192 University of Chicago Hospitals Express routes too. I guess the thing that they're going to have to see is how many people sneak on the bus through the back door.
Yeah, that was my first thought too. The CTA downplayed that, saying, "Listen, that's it's not that big of a problem. Our drivers, can see everything from the rearview mirror. Some of this is self-policing as well. If you see people doing it, and if I'm paying, you might say, hey, listen, buddy, don't do it. But they're not that. They don't seem that concerned about it. The benefits of getting twice as fast loading as opposed to maybe missing a couple people sneaking on, I think it's going to be a bigger benefit.
Yeah, well, as you said, they've been doing this in other cities, and apparently they haven't had much of a problem there, have they?
No, they have. Other cities report that it's that it goes smoothly. People abide by the rules, and sure, why not? Let's give it a try. I'd be happy to get on the back.
Seamus Toomey, Black Club Chicago, and if you want more information on these extremely local news stories and others, what's the website, Seamus?
blockclubchicago.org.
We'll check it out. Talk to you tomorrow. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bob.
All right. You have a good day. It's coming up on 729. And coming up after the 730 news, we'll talk to the woman who actually advises World Health Organizations, not only in the U.S., but in Europe and every place, about infectious diseases. So we'll get the latest on the coronavirus and just what she expects is going to happen next, what exactly we need to be worried about here in the U.S., and what we can do to protect ourselves. We'll talk to her coming up right after the news. And I am going to ask her, because last time I dropped the ball when just at the end of our conversation when I asked her if she uses a hand sanitizer, if she uses Purell, and she said, well, I use one, but not that brand. And I didn't say, well, what brand do you use? Because whatever she's using, that's what I'm going to start bathing in. I'll tell you that. And we're standing by to talk about the coronavirus. Public health officials said yesterday Americans should prepare for the spread of the coronavirus in communities across the country. As of last night, more than 300 cases had been reported in Italy, Iran. Iran had nearly 100 cases, raising the CDC's level of concern and expectation that we will see spread here in the country. 57 people, that's still the count here in the U.S.
Bob, there's a little bit of a development on this morning. We've just learned in the WGN newsroom that President Trump will have a news conference today at 5 o'clock Chicago time about coronavirus. We're told that he is going to speak about the U.S. response and what's happening around the world. He said on a tweet earlier that the U.S. is in great shape when it comes to coronavirus, but he's obviously been rattled. I know there have been some reports that his administration has been rattled in recent days by the effect that it's having on the markets and other places. So we'll hear from the president at 5 o'clock Chicago time.
Yeah, it's become a political issue of sorts now, hasn't it?
It has. And, you know, the last thing that you want is something like that to become political because, you know, people are looking for unbiased information about what's happening and what to do and how to prepare and how to, you know, prevent the spread of something like this. So it'll be interesting to see how we move forward from here. But obviously the CDC and the White House have been on two different pages when it comes to talking about coronavirus.
President obviously concerned with the impact on the economy going into the election season. And also, there are charges that we're not staffed properly because of cutbacks. So more to come on that. And hopefully we'll get in touch with our expert who advises the World Health Organizations around the world on the coronavirus and get an update on just what's happening and what we can do. There's also a story this morning about warming spring temperatures perhaps being the solution to our problems, slowing down the coronavirus outbreak. Prospect could sort of alleviate a lot of the problems around the world. Certainly with the climate here in the U.S., you're looking at maybe April and May as being keys to that. And there's still some debate about whether the warming temperatures will slow the outbreak. So one of the experts quoted in the story this morning are researchers at the University of Maryland, where the virus is being actively studied, said, "I hope it will show seasonality, but it's hard to know." And so we will see.
Yesterday, there was, I don't know if you had to, got to see any of this, the acting Homeland Security Secretary was testifying before a Senate committee, and there were lots of questions to him about how his department, aside from the health officials, the Homeland Security Department, what they were doing to gear up, and they were asking him questions about, hey, do you know how this virus spreads? Can you tell us how you would tell Americans how to react? He couldn't answer that question. They asked him how many protective masks that the government had on hand and whether that would be enough. He couldn't answer those questions. So it feels like that, and these were questions from Republican senators too, by the way. It feels like there was a little bit of disconnection there about what he knew. Maybe he just didn't prepare enough for the briefing to get questions like that, but those seemed like pretty basic questions, and it wasn't really reassuring to hear the answers to those questions.
Yeah, all of this leading up to the decision, obviously, for the president to speak and again, that was just announced. He will address the nation. That's coming up at what time, Central
5
time?
5 o'clock Chicago time.
Is he back? Is he back in this
he
country?
He is arriving back right now, right this morning, from India.
Thank you, Steve Grzanich, keeping us up to date on that. We go to Washington to check in with the professor of infectious diseases in the Department of Medicine at Florida International University, and she's advising the World Health Organizations right now, Dr. Eileen Marty. Dr. Marty, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk to us. You do a lot of work for the government. You advise the medical professionals. Do we currently have the resources and personnel we need to deal with this coronavirus?
Well, we have a lot of resources, we have a lot of personnel, but we need more. That's why the HHS has just asked for $2.5 billion from Congress to fight this coronavirus.
Why did the CDC issue this latest warning that everybody's talking about?
Because there's a lot of new findings about the coronavirus that's out there, the COVID-19 outbreak that's going on in northern Italy, and particularly the COVID-19 outbreak that's going on in Iran, which is not only poorly controlled, but poorly reported, because if you look at the figures coming out of Iran, last night they had 93 cases and something like 16 deaths, and that doesn't jive with what's going on elsewhere. Saying that, however, it's important to realize that China has done a remarkable job of treating its patients. China has instigated a series of different pathways towards containment that have been remarkably effective, not to mention the physicians there are absolutely determined to save every life they can. So we're seeing this differential in what's going on in different countries, including Italy, where, you know, the mortality rate seems higher, but again, it has to do with what exactly is done per patient and the experience of the physicians in treating this kind of virus.
What are the chances that we already have more cases here in the United States than have been detected?
It's possible, but it's not really as, you know, I think we have done a remarkable job so far in following the people who have come in, but it's getting a lot more complicated, Bob, because the prolonged incubation period that some people have that goes beyond the 14-day quarantine, we're still not sure what level of impact the fact that some people are shedding virus before they show symptoms has on the propagation of the epidemic, right? So to make that clear, if somebody is shedding virus and they have no symptoms yet, nobody knows they're sick, right? How much is that impacting on the environment? How much is that impacting on the numbers of other cases? And we only have anecdotal evidence so far as to what that's all about.
Why is it so deadly compared to the flu?
It's a completely different animal. It's a completely different virus from the flu. It has a different mechanism for getting into cells. It affects cells differently. In fact, its immunology is fascinating. Each virus has its different ways of evading our immune system. So flu is a relatively tiny virus compared to this coronavirus. For an RNA virus, coronavirus is a giant. And so it has has certain abilities that the flu doesn't have. And one of the abilities that many of these coronaviruses have, including some of the animal coronaviruses, is the ability to use antibodies that our bodies make against it, not to die, but instead to expand themselves. We call that antibody-mediated enhancement. So this virus tricks our immune system in ways that flu doesn't. Flu tricks it by trying to keep changing what it looks like. That's why we have to get a new flu shot every year. That's not what coronavirus does. It does other things. These other things lead it to be a much more dangerous virus.
It's 7:52. The news will be coming up at the top of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We're talking with Dr. Eileen Marty, who's in Washington. Doctor, you specialize in infectious diseases. Talking about the flu, why can't there be a vaccine for the coronavirus? Do you see one in the future?
Well, so there's a lot of hope and there's a lot of different trials going on right now to create a vaccine. But remember, we have to bear in mind that we, to create a good vaccine for this virus, we have to have an appropriate animal model. Right now, people are trying to use mice, and that's really not the best model for coronavirus because of how that virus interacts with mice immunity, which is not the same as ours. And again, you know, if a mouse produces antibodies, that doesn't mean that that virus is going to be killed by those antibodies. Instead, it can actually be enhanced. So we have this challenge when we're creating a vaccine for this particular virus, just like we had that challenge when we tried to create a vaccine for SARS, which eventually we have one that's in the works, but never proven to work in humans. It's a head start, but it's not where we want to be yet. And even after you make something like that and you prove that it does work, you then have to do safety trials in humans. You have to do phase 1 trials. You have to do phase 2 trials. You have to distribute it. I mean, all of this takes a tremendous amount of time and effort, and that just hasn't happened yet, of course. And so it's going to be a while before we have a valid and distributable vaccine.
I think you know I'm a hypochondriac, so all I've been thinking about lately is how to boost my immune system. How can we all make sure we're protected?
Right. So the reality is, on the good news, is that this virus is easily killed with regular things that we use to clean surfaces and so forth. And washing our hands with soap and water is actually very good for reducing our risk. That's what we want the population to do. We want the population to realize that cleanliness is next to godliness, as they say, particularly for this virus. So keep your surfaces clean, keep your hands clean, and do those things that are necessary to keep your immune system up that we've spoken about before. Eat well, exercise, and get a good night's sleep.
Now, I've been thinking about asking you this all week, because the last time we talked, I asked you about hand sanitizer. I asked you about Purell. You said, I use hand sanitizer, but not that brand. We need to know what brand you use, Dr. Marty.
Oh, actually, I use any brand that has 70% or more of ethanol.
70% ethanol, that's the magic number? That's the magic ingredient?
Yes. That's the magic ingredient.
And are you working on this today in Washington, D.C.? I know you're at a conference.
Right. Well, we're discussing it, but the main focus of today is about antibiotic resistance. So everybody just left the room I was in, and everybody's waiting for me in another room, so I better get going.
Okay. We'll let you loose here. Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
My pleasure, Bob. Good care.
All right. You too. Have a good day. Dr. Eileen Marty, who specializes in infectious diseases and travel medicine. And no kidding, if I read her resume and her bio, even half of it, to introduce her, we'd have no time to talk to her. It's unbelievable. She's a professor of infectious diseases in the Department of Medicine at the FIU College of Medicine. And she works with and for World Health Organizations here in Europe, in Africa, in the Americas, and most recently when we had the Ebola outbreak, she was front and center advising the White House, the National Security Administration, and other government agencies. So you can't get closer to an expert on what's going on with the coronavirus than Dr. Eileen Marty. And it's always good to check in with her and find out what's going on. Mm-hmm. All right, so now we know 70%.
Right.
I already forgot.
70% ethanol or more.
Okay.
And I'm just now on the Purell website to see if the one that I have has 70%.
Does it?
And it does. So the one I have is a Purell Advanced Soothing Gel. Uh-huh. But I'm looking at all of them. They all look like they have 70% ethyl alcohol or more. So
I'm trying to remember if it actually says that on the label or not. You looked it up.
Yeah, I'm looking at the website, the Purell website, because it doesn't say this, at least not on the front of the container.
Mine says on the back, I have Germex Advanced Hand Sanitizer. Yes, ethyl alcohol, 70%.
Okay, there you go. And also, you need to remember, I think that's also the percentage of cocoa, is it, in dark chocolate that you want? I think that's also a minimum of 70% for good health.
Now, wouldn't it be cool if they worked some sort of antibiotic nature into the chocolate?
Yeah.
That way we could just do this all at once?
Yeah, dream on. Yeah. Okay. I think we covered everything you wanted to know and then some about the coronavirus. And we'll check in with her again next week because I'm sure this story is going to keep changing. And as Steve mentioned, the president speaks. 5 o'clock, was it, Steve?
5 o'clock. And we're told this is going to be more of a news conference situation as opposed to a sort of an address sort of thing. So it looks like he'll probably make a statement at the beginning and then take questions on this at 5 o'clock Chicago time.
All right. That'll be interesting because it's become sort of a political hot potato now, how the government is handling this, whether we have enough personnel to do it, whether the agency is staffed properly, whether recent cutbacks have made it harder. So hopefully we'll get some questions answered later on today. We'll talk to Dean Richards about entertainment and what's going on in that department. That's coming up after our 8 o'clock news. I saw an interesting note here about Lady Gaga. And she announced on social media that her next single, called Stupid Love, the first new material she has released since the Star is Born soundtrack, is dropping at midnight Friday. That's what the kids say now. The song will be dropping. It's no longer released. An early version of the song that leaked onto the internet last month is a disco-infused anthem that harks back to Lady Gaga's Born This Way album. So there you go. There's one of the entertainment headlines of the day. More coming up from Dean. I see that Placido Domingo also has released a statement apologizing for the behavior that led to a series of sexual harassment allegations last summer and culminated in his resignation as general manager of the Los Angeles Opera in October. He said, I have taken time over the last several months to reflect on the allegations that various colleagues of mine have made against me. I respect that these women finally felt comfortable enough to speak out, and I want them to know that I am truly sorry for the hurt that I caused them. That from Spanish tenor Placido Domingo, who has faced a series of sexual harassment allegations dating back to last summer. All right, more to come with Dean after the news. It's 8:11, and let's check in with Dean Richards for entertainment news. Dean, we were just talking about Placido Domingo's apology. Do you think that will quell everything? Was it sincere enough?
I've been talking about this ever since the Me Too movement exploded, and person after person after person was accused, sometimes rightly, sometimes wrongly, of different things. But the thing that I've wondered about during this whole thing is, once the dust settles from all of this, can people go back to normal careers again? So, I mean, I guess the answer to your question is, I don't know if it's going to be enough. I don't know if simply an apology is going to be enough. I think it's going to depend on what he does beyond the I'm sorry's. Is there going to be any action, any words to any action to back up the words that he's saying now?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know whether you heard it or not, but David Spade has a new comedy routine where he talks about all these people who have been caught up in the Me Too movement and lost jobs, Charlie Rose and Matt Lauer, and he does a routine now where they're all on an island together, and it's pretty funny.
That is funny,
and it's becoming more populated every week, it seems. All right, let's move on to something new from the Star Wars people. What's up?
Yeah, if you like the Star Wars for your eyeballs, you can get more for your mind. There will be more Star Wars in the form of reading material. There's going to be a line of Star Wars comic books, Star Wars children's books, and Star Wars novels that will be called The High Republic. I'm told that the storyline on this will take place 200 years before Episode 1 from the movies, and there will be new characters. It will be created by many of the writers who brought you the Star Wars movies through the years, but the first books, the first novels, are expected to come out in August. It's a shame they haven't been able to make any money on this franchise.
Yeah, right. They just can't monetize
They keep trying and trying. And
yeah. Dean Richards mentioned last week that he felt the Whitney Houston hologram show might be creepy. The reviews are in now, and what are they telling us,
Dean? Yeah, the critics are agreeing with me. It just goes to show me I don't even really need to go see shows in order to review them.
That's right.
I can just go with my gut feeling on these things. This is, you know, these hologram shows are where they take a deceased artist's image, they reanimate it in a perfect 3D animation. They plop it in the middle of the stage. In this case, with Whitney Houston, they put real-life dancers around this holographic image and a real band, and they recreate a Whitney Houston concert that's called An Evening with Whitney. It opened last night in England. And the vast majority of the reviews are terrible for the show. But one critic in particular kind of sums up what many of them are saying, calling it crass exploitation. Even Whitney Houston's cousin, Dionne Warwick, says that she hates it. She's against it and thinks it's a big money grab. It's just creepy to watch this. I've been showing some video of the show. Of the hologram show on the morning TV show this morning, and you can see a little bit close up, and it's, you know, it's Whitney Houston's likeness, but it's empty and hollow, and I stand by my initial assessment. The whole thing just looks creepy to me. The set company did a Roy Orbison hologram show and a Buddy Holly and a Michael Jackson, and they've done several. I don't know if they did the Tupac hologram show that I think was the first one when they developed this technology. But I just find them all super creepy.
You know, it's interesting. When they first developed this years ago, George Klein, the famous Memphis disc jockey who went to high school with Elvis, he passed away a couple of years ago. But George used to tell the story about how, along with somebody else from the Memphis Mafia, George and these guys brought Elvis this idea for a new project involving holograms for his show. And Elvis said, well, I can't do it like him, but basically it was one of those, I don't need no damn hologram, you know. And so, you know, at the time, I guess some production company wanted to add that to Elvis's concerts, and he wanted no part of it. And now, as you say, there are a lot of relatives of dead performers who are trying to cash in, aren't they?
Right, right. I don't remember if it was Elvis or somebody else. On Saturday Night Live, years and years ago, they were touting a comeback concert for... It was one of those fake commercials that they do. They're touting a comeback concert for somebody who is dead, and they just wheeled out. They put, like, the person's coat or, like, an outfit. I think it was one of, like, Elvis's jumpsuits, maybe.
Yeah, familiar.
They wheel the jumpsuit out in the middle of the stage and put it in the middle of the stage while they play recordings. This hologram thing's really not that different. I mean, it's the 3D image, and, you know, the dancers are dancing in sync with the whole thing, but... to me, it's creepy and borderline disrespectful, yeah, as far as I'm concerned.
An E for exploitation. Yeah. Hopefully, your review of the new show at the Paramount Theater in Aurora is better.
Yes, considerably. There are no dead people in the show. The Secret of My Success that just opened out at the Paramount. They've just been doing such great work at the Paramount since they kind of rejuvenated their Broadway series. It's mostly been with... old classic musicals that they bring back, they redefine, they just breathe new life into a lot of these shows. And they've tried a couple of new works, and the one this season is based on the 1987 Michael J. Fox movie, The Secret of My Success. And it's great. The storyline is about this wide-eyed, innocent young man comes from Minnesota and kind of gets swallowed up in the corporate jungle in New York. He's, you know, supposed to take on a job in New York and gets fired on the first day and just gets eaten up by New York and the corporate jungle. So he takes on a fake identity in order to keep his job. And just one lie on top of another begins to avalanche on this guy. And, of course, you know, a nice love story. It's you know, this is a world premiere musical, first time. And it's so well written and so well performed. I loved the music in the show. I was just completely blown away by the music. It's very funny at the same time. I can't recommend this one enough. They've hit another home run out at the Paramount, as far as I'm concerned. My only, you know, thing, people are going to think that this is, you know, the perfect family show. There are some language issues that surprise me a little bit that just seem a little out of context, really didn't need to be there, but they are. Not the end of the world, but some people, you know, if they're bringing the little kids, might want to know this ahead of time before you go in. But otherwise, I really enjoyed it. And it's going to be there through March the 29th.
And no holograms in that show.
No. No holograms. Nobody deceased.
Good.
As far as I know, maybe it's really good hologram this time.
Yeah, right.
You know, if you do it right, you can't tell. So
Dean and Jeff Garland have a big event coming up at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. So what's this all
about?
Yeah,
they were just announcing this morning, and I can't wait because Jeff Garland's been a pal for a very long time. Anytime that I can sit down and just even chat with him whenever he's in town, it always turns into tons of laughs. And this will certainly be a case like that as well. Jeff is coming in on April 1st, April Fool's Day, and he and I will sit down with a panel of comedians, and they're going to talk about political correctness in comedy today. You know, that's such a big topic now, is how far is too far. The name of the show actually is called Comedy. What's it called? It's Comedy. When is edgy over the edge?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and Jeff, being part of Curb Your Enthusiasm, certainly knows something about how far you go and what's over the edge sometimes.
On, over the cliff.
Yeah, on Curb Your Enthusiasm. I love it. Like, personally, this new season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, I am sometimes embarrassed at how much I'm laughing at things I know good and well a grown man should not be laughing at, but they do things on that show that are just amazing. So I think Jeff's perspective, especially coming from his Curb Your Enthusiasm world, is going to be really interesting. He's also on the Goldbergs, which, you know, half the time on the Goldbergs, Jeff is sitting around in his tidy whities, and some people would argue that, you know, that's too far on TV, but I'm going to get him to explain the story of what the ABC television network made Jeff do in order to do those underpants scenes on television, which is pretty funny. He's told the story a couple of times, but it's hilarious. So we'll talk comedy that night. It's all going to be at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, as I say, the evening of April Fool's Day, which is 360 North State Street in Chicago. You can buy tickets now. You can get more information if you go to their website. It's the easiest way, museum.tv. Super easy website to remember.
April Fool's Day. Jeff Garland and Dean Richards at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. I think Larry David's goal is to push as far over the cliff as possible for Curb.
As he should, too. It's HBO. You know what? If it's on HBO, you know it's going to be edgy. You know it's going to be something that's like, that's unbelievable. And, you know, I forget how many seasons we're into now with Curb Your Enthusiasm. I want to say 10.
Yeah, I think
11,
so.
Something like that. You'd think that the show would begin to be running out of gas and that, you know, we would have seen everything that Larry David has to do, every shocking, politically incorrect thing that's possible to do. Not the case. If you've been watching this season, the show is just as edgy and just as funny as possible.
Yeah, Sunday nights on HBO. Yeah. The first episode, I thought, meandered around a little bit, and then everything got better in subsequent weeks. I think there's just no shortage now of material, and, you know, Larry's right on that. So it's not like their old slogan, right? It's not TV, it's HBO.
It's HBO, yeah.
All right, Dean Richards, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
And coming up, Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau. He's waiting in the PPG Paints Green Room, and he'll be on with us after the 8:30 news to talk about, among other things, how scammers use political issues to get your attention. Also, there are a lot of romance scams out there now. And in the midst of tax season, you need to know about the IRS and when they will contact you, when they won't contact you, how they would contact you, because there's a lot of scams in that department as well. So that'll be coming up after the 8:30 news. And if you've got a question about that for the Better Business Bureau, you can always get in touch with us by phone or text or email. Let me give you those addresses here. The phone number and the text number is the same, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Email bobshow@wgnradio.com, bobshow@wgnradio.com. I have a second here, so I do want to acknowledge a text we got after Eileen Marty, who's the government advisor on infectious diseases and matters like the coronavirus, told us that she does use a hand sanitizer as long as it's, what was it, 70% ethanol, right? So somebody texted us, and this is pretty funny. Let me find this here. Oh, yeah, here it is. Vodka is 50% alcohol. So can we just wash our hands and face with vodka? Oh, 40% ethanol. 40% ethanol, says this texter. You should have asked the doctor what would happen if we all just had a shot of vodka every day. Would that help prevent the coronavirus? Oh, thank you for that text. I don't think so. Let's get a quick weather update from WGN meteorologist Mike Jansen. Mike, do we expect snow all day and through the evening rush hour?
No, we do not. The snow is actually tapering off in quite a few spots across northeastern Illinois right now, which is some good news. Actually, the visibility is, I was looking up Lakeshore Drive with our WeatherBug camera atop the Field Museum. Actually, you can see more of the skyline now. So we're starting to see things taper a bit. The rest of today, we're going to watch this continue with the snow moving further towards the east, at least the measurable snowfall, the accumulating snow potential there. Maybe some flurries still left over on this side of the lake. But if you're wondering about that evening commute, no issues in Chicago. It does appear, though, we could still have some of that snow lingering over into northwest Indiana during the evening commute. There, folks there are going to have to deal with this winter weather advisory until 6 o'clock this evening. So it kind of gives you an idea of how long we expect to have maybe some slick roadways and some sloppy conditions out there on the roads.
All right, Mike, thanks. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And now let's get to Steve Burness, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Chicago and Northern Illinois. Good to see you. Welcome, Steve. I've got a load of stuff to throw at you here. You ready?
I'm ready for you always, Bob.
Okay, first of all, I'm sick of these robocalls I get on my cell phone here, and they mask the number. So half the time, sometimes it even comes up your number, different numbers. Sometimes it looks like a familiar number. What's going on with this? And there is it just me, or are there more of these than ever now?
There's more than ever now. And then what happens is that consumers still believe caller ID. And unfortunately, the scammer knows how to take care of that and change it around. They make it close to your number thinking, hey, it's somebody I know or somebody my work number. And that's why they want you to answer. But yeah, robocalls are the number one, you know, probably the number one call we're getting on the scams. And they continuously do it. The government's going to crack down on it, but I don't know how they're going to do it because the scammers don't care.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes I get on my phone spam alert. It'll say spam alert, but not always.
Not always, right. Sometimes it catches, sometimes it doesn't, but then they change numbers so rapidly, within minutes that they change it. They want to throw everything at the wall and see what sticks and see who answers. And once you answer, you'll get more calls. So we, the Better Business Bureau, suggest don't answer a call unless you know that caller ID, unless you know that person and it shows up. Otherwise, let it go to voicemail. Then you can, if they leave a number, you can use that number in Google and reverse search it and see what number.
So just don't answer.
Don't answer the phone calls. It's getting bad.
It's an election year. Do we have a lot of scammers using political issues to get your attention now?
Yeah, they want you to donate. So they're, and now, especially after a debate last night, they're going to, you know, people, it's in people's minds. So they're going to send the fake robocalls out to you asking you to donate. And they're actually not going to the party. It's going to a scammer. They're asking for your credit card information, things of that nature. It's happening across the nation. So if you get one of those calls, if you do want to donate, do investigate before you invest. Do the research on them and get some information from them in writing.
When we see a product and we see the Better Business Bureau label there, what does that actually mean? Does it mean you've tested this?
No, it doesn't mean we tested. It means they meet our business practices, our standards for business practices. So that means that we know about them. We have done some research on them, and they are a verified business itself before we give them the seal. But again, people fraudulently use our seal too. So make certain if you see a work at home offer making $1 million with the Better Business Bureau seal, it's not it's not true. But my biggest frustration, Bob, as you know, is consumers don't call us first. They call us after about companies. We have all this information on companies that we can prevent them from losing their money or losing their life savings on some of them, and we can actually give them good businesses to go to. So we have accredited businesses that which we give our seal to, companies that we know. So if you need an automobile or waterproof or whatever it may be, snowplow, you can come to the Better Business Bureau and we'll give you a list of accredited businesses.
What's the best and easiest way to contact you?
BBB.org. And before you buy or hire, go to our website, BBB.org, or our phone number, 312-832-0500.
BBB.org?
Correct.
Or the phone number?
312-832-0500.
After a quick break, I want to ask you about some scams related to the tax season and also romance. And I came across something that sounded really good. It's an ad, and if you owe credit card companies a lot of money, and who doesn't, this company says they will match you with a low-interest loan you can use to pay off every single one of your balances. Anyway, there's some stuff in here I want to ask you about. Hang on. Steve, I saw this website, and basically it invites you to pay your credit card bill using this website, and they will pay off all your credit card bills, and it sounds here like it's easy to qualify. You just go online, and you could pay off your debt faster and cheaper. Have you come across any of these? Are they legit?
Some of them are legit, but you really have to look at them more closely. There's nothing free today, so basically, nobody's going to wipe up your debt that you're going to have to pay for it somehow. So basically, they're giving you a new loan, and it's going to go for a longer period of time. You've got to check on the APR, and there's so many different factors. But again, if somebody promises you to wipe your debt away, it's a scam.
It's tax season, so does that mean there are a lot of fake messages coming to us from the IRS? They don't. Unfortunately, I know from experience, they don't. They don't call you, do they?
No, they don't call you. They usually show up at your door, or they send you a nice, nasty letter
that
they want to see you.
They communicate by mail, mainly.
Mainly. So if somebody calls you up from the IRS, and especially if the caller ID says IRS, it's fake. The IRS does not do that demand payment within 30 minutes. Any type, a lot of our scams, Bob, are within 30 minutes. They want you to do something quickly
it's
like
the dominoes effect.
Exactly. So the only thing you should buy in 30 minutes is a pizza, and that's it. And other than that, it's a scam, because that's a lot of our scams are coming that way. The IRS is not going to call you. People Gas is not going to call you. ComEd is not going to call you. They're going to shut your power off.
IRS doesn't even email you, I don't think.
They do email sometimes.
Do they?
But they do follow up with a letter, so make sure you get that official letter first. They do email sometimes, but mostly it's a letter format.
Are there still a lot of romance scams out there?
Especially after Valentine's Day, yes. It's in the millions of dollars, and unfortunately now the millennials are the number one demographic that is being scammed, so it's moved away from the elderly on this one. The key to this, the tip-off to the rip-off, Bob, is basically that if you haven't met the person, you never give them money. And that's what they're doing, is they're trying to extract money from you. And they send you these great pictures. They look good. They're models. They kind of look like you, Bob. You know, models and good looking. But unfortunately...
No, I'm only looking like this today because we had a TV crew in here today. Don't come in here tomorrow and look at me.
But basically what they're doing is just using fake pictures, and they're trying to solicit money from you. And that's the tip off to the rip off. And again, if they try to steer you away from the websites, let's talk on emails and not meet. That's the scam.
You know what's scary is how legit some of these emails you get look. I mean, they really copy corporate logos carefully, right? Don't they?
They do. They really make them look good. And actually, a lot of complaints are coming in now from businesses that it looks like it's coming from your boss, that you have to buy gift cards or wire some money outside the country. Actually, one of my employees got a fake email from me. It looked exactly like my email. And basically, the emails now read the text, Bob. So they texted my employee after they sent the email saying, I just sent you an email. You didn't respond yet within 3 minutes. So they're getting very, very good at what they're doing. Again, check out the offer with the Better Business Bureau first. On scams especially, we can let you know for your business, your consumer. We have a scam tracker like Santa Tracker. It keeps track of the scams across North America. But let us know about the scams. Even if you don't fall for it, let us know so we can warn others.
Do you get a lot of complaints from people who have had their identity stolen? I mean, every time we put in any information online, I think think we always have in the back of our mind, is this safe? How should we go about that?
Yeah, identity theft is still the fastest growing white collar crime today. So it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when your identity will be stolen. My identity was stolen. Lisa Madigan's ID was stolen. It's going to happen to you eventually. So you got to be proactive. And what I mean by that is get your credit report on an annual basis, regardless if you're getting credit or not. And that's annualcreditreport.com. That's the one endorsed by the government. And that's the first way to finding out if you're a victim of identity theft. But protect everything, all your information. Get a shredder for your house and never, ever give your Social Security number out to anybody. They don't need it unless it's a source that you know that actually needs, like your doctor's office and things of that nature.
Yeah, you know what I do? You may want to listen to this tip. I make sure I'm always broke, have no money in my checking accounts, and that way if they steal my identity, they don't get anything.
There you go.
What about weather-related scams, people who need help because their basement's flooded or they need to hire a home inspector? Is this area still the one that really has the most complaints?
In the springtime, it does, because next week is Severe Weather Prep Month by the state of Illinois. So basically, it's information. It's disasters happens all the time, and it's unfortunate. You got to be prepared for them. You know, last year, my house, my neighborhood was damaged by a major hailstorm in early in May, but the residual effect continue on, and you have those storm chasers, people that come out of the woodwork and are trying to take advantage of consumers. And biggest frustration, again, Bob, as I mentioned, is consumers don't check out those offers or companies. They assume they pull up their house with a van that has a Polish name or in a Polish neighborhood or a Spanish name in a Spanish neighborhood, and they do no checking on them until after, and they realize they've been duped. So, again, if somebody comes to your house, want to sell you something, yes, that's fine, but a lot of complaints come to the door-to-door salesman. Check them out. Get three offers, not just one offer, and don't give them cash.
You've been doing this a long time. It must amaze you how sophisticated these scams have become.
It's truly amazing. I've been doing it for 32 years, Bob. It's nothing. It's amazing. Every day I learn something new, a new twist of an old scam. There's a lot of old scams out there. It's still, you know, the stuffing envelopes. I started that when 1987. I started handling those complaints, and I'm still handling them today. And we keep telling people, don't fall for it. You're not going to make millions stuffing envelopes, but they make $10 on somebody, and they get it from 1,000 people. That's where they make their money. And people with $10, I'm not going to complain. But you need to complain. Come to the Better Business Bureau, no matter how much money you lose, so you can file a complaint. And we can take action against the company and let warn others as well. There's so many review sites out there now. It's actually better for businesses that are scammers. Because before it used to be us and the government. And then now it's got thousands of websites you can voice your concerns and post your reviews on. And that's how they're getting away with it. Because they only have one complaint here instead of 1,000.
Yeah, and you wonder how legit those sites are, how
exactly
legit those reviews are.
Yeah, some are fake review sites too.
Yeah.
They could be your neighbors. They could be their employees of there. We've found that out. So really check with the reliable sources like the Better Business Bureau and other organizations that you know and trust.
Yeah, it seems next to impossible to police. And also a growing business now, these companies that help you protect your identity. And do you hear from people who have signed up for those, and what are you hearing?
So basically, it's like an insurance policy. These companies are guaranteed they can help you once your identity is theft. Remember, a very large one years ago put his ID, his Social Security number on a bus and drove it through town, and basically he realized they can steal your identity. So no company is perfect. Nobody can stop it. So consumers have to realize this is and like an insurance policy. They can help you. You can do a lot of this yourself as well. There's a lot of sites. The Better Business Bureau has information. The Illinois Attorney General's Office has information on preventing identity theft. So take a look ahead of time and what you can do yourself, and others can help you. Yes, it's up to you, though I can't recommend or disapprove those companies.
And give us those addresses again, the phone number, and also the way to get in touch with the Better Business Bureau if you have any questions or reviews, for that matter.
The best way is bbb.org. You know, before you buy or hire, go to our website, get information about the company ahead of time, and call us. We're there from 8 to 5, 312-832-0500. But again, everything's on the internet. Please search us when you're checking out companies or offers itself, because there's a lot of companies in business that I wouldn't do business with, and other people have warned it, and we have an F rating on them, and they've been in business for 30 or 40 years. But you got to check, and sometimes you call us, it's too late.
Yeah, it's good advice from the Better Business Bureau. Steve Burness is the man over there, and it's been a long time since you were our guest on Fox Thing in the Morning.
It was a long time ago. We were my first on Fox Thing. Live TV was with you back in the 90s.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, I'm going to start putting that on my resume. I have Bill Rancic down, too. We gave him a shot when he was, I think, running a, I don't remember what it was, a cigar store
shop
or something.
Right,
was that
exactly.
it? Yeah. Okay, I'm adding you to the list,
Thank
Steve.
You so much.
All right, keep us posted on scams, will you?
I will. Thank you so much.
All right, good to see you. Coming up momentarily, we'll get the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And we have a moment or two here before we check in with John Williams, get a preview on what's coming up at 9:08. Meantime, wanted to thank Jennifer for the email. I'm going to follow her advice today. Jennifer writes, I came across this study online about naps and thought about you. And then she included an excerpt from this study, which reads as follows. A nap a day keeps high blood pressure at bay. Catching some midday shut-eye is linked to similar drops in blood pressure seen with other lifestyle changes, some medications as well. That's from Science Daily. And Jennifer writes, there you go, nap away. You don't have to twist my arm.
Yeah, so another good excuse for taking a nap in the afternoon. Outstanding.
That's right. Once again, Steve Grzanich let us know as soon as it was announced. We'll be hearing from the president today at 5, right?
That's it, 5 o'clock. It's billed as a news conference, but he's done this before where he says it's a news conference and then doesn't take any questions. So we'll have to just see. It's on coronavirus.
Okay. Well, that's a hot political matter now, in addition to being something that we're all concerned about now here in the U.S. Let's find out what John Williams has got on his mind for the big broadcast coming up after the news.
Yeah,
hi, John.
Let's find out.
Do you know, anybody?
Oh, wait, that's me.
That's you.
Well, I'll tell you, that coronavirus just has so many tentacles, doesn't it?
It's getting scary.
Hate to think of a thing like that with tentacles, but it does have them. And the financial concerns are real. But the question I had for a financial advisor was, so what do I do? Like, if it's going down, 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 you know, Orion Samuelson has famously said, if the markets are going bad and your portfolio is getting hurt, don't look.
Yeah, that, I subscribe to that theory. And also, I mentioned this yesterday, I looked like a genius in 2009 when I didn't know anything about anything. I froze with fright, and then I looked like a genius a few years later when the market came
back.
And
maybe the advice we're going to get a little later on, although if you do see this happening, what is a person supposed to do with whatever they've got? We'll answer that question. I heard a song on TV last night, Bob. You will appreciate this, you being the music man, that was so good and touching. I thought, I have to share this with my listeners after 9 o'clock.
A theme song?
A TV show had a song on it. It's
okay.
Not the TV show's theme.
I got it. All right, I'll listen.
I've been introducing my audience to a lot of new music lately, and I must say, nobody seems to like the music I'm playing. But today, I think we're going to turn the tide.
There you go. More music more often here on the Big 72. Hey, John, the Dow is up more than 200 points. NASDAQ up more than 100. Happy days are here again.
Woohoo!
We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.